Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Rewear. It's been a few months since you last heard from me. Actually, yeah, it's been a really long time. But we're back with the last two episodes of the season. This is a special two-part series and will be the last two episodes of the season. I took some time off previously from writing and recording the podcast to focus on other aspects of my job, like helping to manage the shop on a daily basis and putting together a study report titled Inside Our Wardrobe, a collaborative wardrobe study, which I will definitely get to in a bit. And I also just came back from a month-long break, so I am quite ready to get down to business.
Welcome to Rewear the Fashion Pulpit,
a podcast aimed at reintroducing new language around the way we speak about clothes. I'm your host, Singrin, and I use she/her pronouns. In each episode, we explore what it means to be a part of the fashion system and how we can be more intentional in the ways we forge a personal relationship with our clothes. Well, before I get into talking about the study report, I want to spend some time in this episode talking about a big thing that we did recently. You might already be aware if you follow us on social media or have visited our new space. I mean, it's been so long. But TFP moved into a new unit at OUE Downtown Gallery and have moved out of our Marina One space, which we called home for about a year, 2 years, yeah. So we've been at OUE Downtown Gallery for over 2 months now and have definitely found our footing in this new space. It might seem futile to be talking about our move now that it's been some time, but I suppose it's still important to address and also to unpack. As much as we loved our previous space, we lost it to tenants who could afford to pay much higher rental fees. And this is, of course, not the fault of the new tenants at all, but I think it points towards an issue in the larger picture and in the grand scheme of things. The reality is that small and independent businesses, organizations, and spaces are constantly at the mercy of mega corporations or simply undermined by the bureaucracy into non-existence. I'm thinking about art establishments, community collectives, and also green spaces driven out of existence. As I say this, as much as TFP prides itself as going against the current and building an alternate economy, this makes us even more vulnerable to rising rent prices and susceptible to the conventional way of doing business. The move feels like a slap in the face and a big, big reality check. I speak for myself when I say that I was processing a lot of anger and frustration at the general system, one that despite multiple cries for help, warnings, articles, reports from workers, laborers, researchers, and activists, and people actually living this reality, still choose to maintain the status quo, one that willfully neglects to acknowledge the value in the work that we do by design, one that till today prioritizes economic prosperity and commercial interests. To expand on this further, of course, would be a whole topic for a different day. My heart was, and to a certain extent, now, still very heavy. And, you know, maybe writing and recording this bit and inserting it here in the intro is me writing to heal and to make sense of the world we live in. If you resonate with me, I hope you also find some respite. If you're interested in our moving process and what went down during the most crucial of times, we only had 10 days to move and to prepare for an entire new inventory. We actually recorded a vlog to document this journey. Nadia, our video content lead, managed to capture the chaos that was thrown at us and how the team came together to accomplish a near impossible task of moving and setting up a space in, like I said, just 10 days. The vlog will be linked in the description box. Back to Inside Our Wardrobe, which is why I think this project means more than just a project or a one-off campaign. It is a deliberate rebellion for me against the capitalistic way of problem solving. This report or the study is not a shopping guide or a fail-proof recipe on how to transition from fast to ethical fashion in the quickest way possible overnight. It is instead an invitation for all wearers of clothes to go slower, look inwards, and think about why, how, and where, and when they interact with the clothes in their wardrobe. Because once we allow ourselves to do that, we would start to realize that the cracks in this industry are, in fact, in plain sight. This episode is brought to you by Podcast Mate. Podcast Mate produces podcasts for iconic brands and market leaders. They do the heavy lifting for you so you don't have to. All you gotta do is press record. I know, having a branded podcast is one of the best ways to establish thought leadership and brand communications. It's another platform where you can communicate your brand values, have authentic relationships with your audience, and show your brand's personality while delivering value through quality content. The struggle is that's going to be additional work for your marketing team. And really, who has the time to do all the legwork, research, and production when you don't have an internal team who's an expert at that? You don't want your team to have to spread themselves thinly, right? You don't want to overwhelm them by adding more tasks on their plate, tasks where they don't have experience in, where they aren't an expert of. You know how the best companies handle this? They delegate the work to specialized agencies who are experts at producing high-quality branded podcasts. That way, you know for sure that your podcast is of consistent quality with everything that you do with your company's marketing efforts. That's exactly what we did with our own podcast. Rewear is an original production by Podcast Mate, and they do all the heavy lifting for us. Post-production, art direction, sound design, audio engineering, and content repurposing. Don't overwhelm your marketing team by adding more onto their plate. Delegate your company's podcast production to the team that does it best, so your team can focus on doing what they do best. Reach out to Podcast Mate so they can help you get the ball rolling. They will make your podcast production an easy breezy journey. They do the heavy lifting for you so you don't have to. All you gotta do is press record. Email them at nash@thepodcastmate.co. That's nash@thepodcastmate.co, or check out thepodcastmate.co. So just a side note, unlike previous episode, there will be no visual recordings of these two new episodes, and part two will be out shortly after this episode goes live. So listen on, and I hope they give you some food for thought. I would love to also share a bit more about how Inside Our Wardrobe came about with you. Ray and I first spoke about this project late October 2020, so that's almost 2 years ago, and work began officially in the second half of 2021. What started out as an investigation on the local secondhand clothing industry evolved into a wearers first and wearers focused collaborative wardrobe study. What does this mean? As someone who is curious about the relationships we have with our clothes, Inside Our Wardrobe is a project that highlights wearers as experts in their own fashion consumption habits. It hopes to return the agency of dress, style, and just the simple act of clothes wearing back to the wearers of clothes. This narrative juxtaposes that of the fashion industry's pursuit for commercial interests and personal interests in upholding and maintaining current systems of exploitation. In this episode, I'll be covering mostly the qualitative results gathered from participants and also speak to the various ways we interact with our wardrobes and the act of wearing our clothes. More info on where we shop, how often we shop, our clothing expenditure, how often we participate in fashion activities like swapping, renting, and clearing out our wardrobes can be found in the report, which I will, of course, link in the description box. Before I continue, I would like to say a big thank you again to Singapore Sustainability Academy, whom we partnered with to support the study and drive an online campaign with 13 collaborators. With their help, we managed to gather 722 responses at the end of 2 months with everyone's support and involvement. All participants took part in a 45-minute wardrobe exercise to take stock, audit, and document the contents of their wardrobes. So when speaking about fashion sustainability and what it might look like in the future, most conversations choose to lead with swanky sustainability credentials and certifications. Whilst they hold merit within their rights, though this is right now extremely debatable because of H&M's latest greenwashing lawsuit, which you might be interested if you're listening to this podcast, so go read more about it. They do little for the lived realities and experiences of the wearers and makers of clothes, who bear the bulk of the consequences of the fashion industry's unequal structures and continuous overproduction. Dear listeners, you should be familiar with this by now. Most of the clothes we see now are churned out rapidly with precise calculations to balance out the material application and retail price to yield maximum profit. What do I mean by material application? Like the choice of design, types of fabric used, and also the various textile treatments that are applied to a piece of garment. This comes at the cost of an acceleration of the climate emergency, along with worsened economic situations of garment workers and loss of human and non-human lives along with their habitats. All of this whilst adding new inventory to bursting warehouses and fulfillment centers like there's no tomorrow, depleting the value of labor, material, and creativity. According to Fashion Values, an initiative by the Center for Sustainable Fashion, a clear imperative for fashion and sustainability is to move away from the cycle of novelty and obsolescence, creating a culture in which fulfillment is found through fashion experiences other than buying new products. Inside Our Wardrobe concurs and puts forward another perspective, that the material, emotional, and monetary value extends beyond the transactional relationship between the wearer and their clothes. What does fashion look like in our wardrobe and our everyday lives away from trend-driven and celebrity-fronted fashion? What if we begin to notice that our wardrobe as a subconscious documentation of our past, present, and future selves? Would this make us pause and rethink our relationship with our clothes? In the report, I write and would love to share and love to read it out. So we have an audio version of this. Imagine this, our past selves tucked away in forgotten nooks and crannies of a vessel, the wardrobe. Our present selves are represented as the clothing items we reach out for the most. They're typically placed in the most visible and reachable areas. These items could be sitting at the top of the drawer, sprawled across your chair drawer, or worn fresh straight from the laundry. What about future selves? Our future selves are possibly embodied in the clothes we have yet to wear, ones that we tuck away in the darkest corners of our wardrobe. What about ourselves do we hold on to and share with the world right now that is translated through clothing? Inside Our Wardrobe believes that articles of clothing, after their purchase, continue to provide and satisfy a wearer's aesthetic and empathetic needs. The study centers itself in a theory that wardrobes enclose not only clothes, but the personal biographies associated with them. Amanda Mao wrote for The Atlantic on the human touch of fashion that gradually fades into the background as big data, trend forecasting, and algorithm fashion takes over. They say, at a certain point, you're not really paying for a product, but for the hopeful experience of buying something new. Whatever dress eventually shows up at your house is largely incidental to the monetary rush of acquiring it, they add. What Inside Our Wardrobe hoped to contribute to was a conscious collective shift in consumer mindset and behavior. By getting participants to actively audit and quote-unquote inventorize their wardrobe, it hopes to divert from hyperfixation on the newness of clothes. After doing multiple wardrobe inventories now and even attempting to manually document every single article of clothing in my own wardrobe, this process created an alternative experience of clothing interaction. Beyond the transactional relationship that I'm sure every one of us are most familiar with, participating in a wardrobe exercise might seem futile and insignificant in the larger picture of urgent systemic and structural change, but it is in confronting and thereby understanding our relationships with these material objects, and in this case, clothes, can we begin to grasp and incorporate sustainability principles and weave these practices into our everyday lives. The following section comprises some parts read off, lifted directly from the report and my own company thoughts. It serves as a reading guide, not an all-encompassing summary of the entire report, so I highly encourage you to still check the report out. The report's format and presentation of data follows the flow of survey questions that we first released to the public. We first begin with asking how participants understand the principles of sustainability without any prompts. Most mentioned keywords were wear and sustain. What does this say about what we think of sustainability in fashion? Could it be that it is in fact rooted in the act of wear? Lisa Hines, professor of gender and cultural studies at the University of Sydney, suggests that for sustainability to be interwoven with everyday wear, wearers should potentially identify as agents of the fashion system's reinvention. Perhaps the most accessible practices of sustainability in fashion returns to oneself, where it is uninfluenced by the forces of the market or by greenwashing campaigns on print and social media. Other keywords like good quality, longevity, long time, secondhand were also mentioned frequently. It could be understood that clothing of better quality, ones that stand the test of time in terms of durability, style, relevance, and how well it fits into a person's lifestyle at any given point, encapsulates the matter of sustainability for wearers. Responses also point to the social and environmental concerns they have about the fashion industry, its severe lack of care for its garment workers, and pollution caused by clothing manufacturing. These are potential factors that are sometimes non-negotiables for wearers who choose to wear items of fashion that represent their values. Participants least mentioned keywords, on the other hand, are more common in post-consumer stages of clothing use, words like repurpose, recycle, and reuse. This points towards post-use as an afterthought in many cases. The study then moved into understanding how participants feel about their wardrobe. Participants were asked to use three keywords to summarize how their wardrobe made them feel, and this myriad of emotions were recorded and presented as a word wheel in the report. So there were emotions ranging from a spectrum of increasing satisfaction and acceptance. Words like content, enough, safe, and love symbolize stability and the wearer's peace of mind when looking at what they own. Meanwhile, words like messy, overwhelming, and guilty reflect dissatisfaction and negative feelings for their wardrobes on the other side of the spectrum. A wearer might simultaneously experience both affirmative and negative emotions for their wardrobe at once, or it can happen over a period of time. This is absolutely normal because sartorial memories that clothes hold onto can spark visual and sensorial-related emotions. Lewis Crewe, professor of geography and author of The Geographies of Fashion, Consumption, Space, and Value, says, "Far from being a benign surface, clothes have agency. They can outwit us, fail, and have the capacity to eat us up with anxiety. Our clothes can betray us, act as markers of social and bodily failure, and refuse to accomplish their intended effects. In spite of our best endeavors to be an imagined other, our clothes have the capacity to be the superior agent." Besides, the fashion industry, a $3 trillion industry, heavily relies on disappointment as a partner of fulfillment. Writer and lecturer of post-consumptive fashion narratives, Isabel Mondego Moore, writes poignantly about this complex. Industrial fashion's mainstream discourse of love as desire at the point of production means never fully feeling fulfilled and therefore needing to buy more. The multiplicity of a wardrobe means that it is even more common that different wearers feel individually about their wardrobe, hence explaining the wide range of emotions wearers have towards the matter.
Chasing Flow State is brought to you by PodcastMate. They produce podcasts for iconic brands and market leaders. If you like how this podcast is produced, reach out to PodcastMate. They will walk you through the podcast creation from scratch to launch. Visit their website at thepodcastmate.co.
Have you ever wondered or considered how often it is you wear a certain piece of clothing in your wardrobe? Inside Our Wardrobe wants to know how regularly or irregularly we utilize the existing pieces that we own. This is, of course, depending on the size of one's wardrobe. If you have a smaller wardrobe, then the wear regularity of all your pieces would be, of course, higher than wearers who have larger and denser wardrobes. In the wardrobe exercise, we had participants account to the best of their ability how many pieces of clothing they keep in their wardrobe and how much of it is worn regularly, how much of it is no longer worn, and how much of it haven't yet been worn. We then asked the participants what causes them to gravitate to these pieces more regularly and what drives them away from wanting to wear something that they own and keep in their wardrobes. So, what comes to your mind when you think of the pieces you reach out for the most? Is it the color? Is it its level of comfort, practicality, or suitability? Personally, I always match what I would wear for the day with what activities I'll be engaging in throughout the day and where I'll be. I'm always thinking about the weather, if I would be too hot, too sweaty, or too cold. I'm sure many people will resonate with me in terms of this, especially if you live in Singapore. If I were going to work, I would make sure to layer different pieces to keep myself warm in a very, very, very cold shop. But if I were meeting my friends after work, I would make sure to wear something lighter underneath to keep me cool when there's no air conditioning available. So I would say comfort really is my top priority. Most of my most worn pieces bring me comfort beyond material comfort, but also knowing that it's tried and tested, that it looks good on me. 40% of participants noted that seeing similar garments on friends or social media is the most compelling reason for them to wear the items in their wardrobe more regularly, while 16% of participants noted the ease of garment care as the most important reason when it comes to wearing their clothes more regularly. Ease of care refers to the ease of garment care and aftercare. For instance, does it need ironing, steaming, dry cleaning, or a different method of washing that requires the wearer to go out of their way to maintain the condition of the clothing? This typically applies to occasion wear, like formal dresses, suits, etc. Clothes that are made from delicate materials like silk or cashmere might also require special attention. And this is also largely dependent on how much time you have when it comes to caring for these clothes after you wear them. On the other hand, what makes you wear your clothes less? Do you think about it? I mean, before I engaged or embarked on this research, it's something I think about on a day-to-day basis. Might be just me, but according to the survey results, an ill fit of the garment is the most prevalent reason, as cited by 85% of participants, for not wearing an item more frequently. Do you agree with this? Do you resonate with it? I think I do. I think once I either get bigger or smaller and something doesn't fit me as it used to, then it sort of gets forgotten or sort of discarded in my mind, back of my wardrobe. As indicated by 71% of participants, on the other hand, no longer having occasions to wear these clothes is the second most common reason for less frequent wear. More than one third of participants indicated that clothes purchased on impulse as a reason for less frequent wear. The increased prevalence of e-commerce shopping means that clothes are bought before having been tried on in person. The likelihood of an ill fit or a change of heart becomes even more probable. This points towards the very sad reality that more clothes are made to be bought than worn. According to textiles professor Jade Whitson-Smith, other factors resulting in irregular wear in the long run include a shift in perception of self, resulting in a mismatch between one's perceived self-identity and their clothes, change in personal circumstances like changes to one's body, changes to one's work environment and circumstance, and changes to one's income. Also, the length of ownership of a piece of garment, with wear and tear occurring over time, the materiality and functionality of clothes change in tandem. When looking at the habits of wear, we also noticed a particular category of clothes that belong to that of no longer worn. These clothes remain within the physical confinements of a wardrobe, like they're still stored within the wardrobe or where you keep your clothes, but they are no longer utilized functionally or worn the way they used to be worn. 42% of participants indicated that the percentage of dormant clothing, which fall under this category, they own is less than 20%. In other words, most participants wear 80% of the clothes in their wardrobe, even if they're not worn as regularly as they would like. As put forth in the introduction of this report, our wardrobes are vessels and time capsules that contain and document our past, present, and future selves. In this case, I'm curious to know, and I wonder if clothes can enter our lives first as a garment, then transition into an object, whether it's dormant and non-moving or not over time. And then they might remain and stay as a material and immaterial keeper of memories. As wardrobes function as storage spaces, they inevitably house the multiplicity of our lifestyle, personal circumstances, and perception of self over time. I really want to know what makes you no longer wear or no longer wish to put on any article of clothing in your wardrobe that you still keep. I would love to know why that is the case. On the other hand, the study also explores why we still keep the items we don't wear. According to the survey results, when asked about reasons compelling participants to still hold on to these pieces, even if they're no longer worn, the most popular reason appears to be that participants are waiting to direct them out of their wardrobe through the means of resale or giving to friends and family and other ways of ownership transfer. So what about you? Do you hold on to your clothes for practical or sentimental reasons?
If you like how this podcast is produced and you want the same quality for your show, reach out to us at reach@podcastmate.co so we can talk about how to help make your podcast production an easy breezy journey. All you got to do is press record. PodcastMate produces podcasts for iconic brands and market leaders. You can also check out our website at podcastmate.co. That is podcastmate.co. Whenever you're ready, we'll be here for you.
Okay, we've come to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for sticking around till the end. I hope this makes you intrigued and it makes you want to read the report in detail. And if you have read the report, what is your main takeaway from it? Please share them with me. I would love to know what surprised you. And what of it do you resonate or agree with, and which parts did you disagree with? If you have suggestions or feedback on what could have been done better, I am all ears. My contact details are linked below, and I really, really look forward to hearing from you. For now, that's the end of the episode, and stay tuned to the next one as I speak about the last section of the report with regards to disposal and how we dispose of clothing we do not want to keep anymore. The last episode of this season, we're still on season one, can you believe it? We'll demystify the misconceptions of textile recycling and the reasons we need to reframe the way we look at decluttering and clothing donations. Thank you and have a good rest of the day.
We would like to thank our friends over at PodcastMate who produced this podcast. Production Manager, Chair Abora. Creative and Marketing Lead, Michael Alonso. Video Producer, Ian Velasquez. Sound Design and Podcast Producer, Lemuel Morata. Executive Director, Nesh Maiwela. Rewear is created by The Fashion Pulpit, a production in partnership with PodcastMate, hosted by Singun Shen.